Welcome to the Future of Education podcast. Here's our host, the co-founder of 2-Hour Learning, Mackenzie Price.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Future of Education. I'm Mackenzie Price. Joining me today is Shahar Link. He's the CEO and founder of Mindspire Tutoring and Test Prep, which motivates, guides, and challenges students to become better learners and thinkers. Yesterday, Shahar and I went over reasons why standardized tests like the ACT and the SAT still matter. And today, we're going to discuss 4 rules to ensure high school academic success. So here's my conversation with Shahar Link. He's the CEO and founder of Mindspire Tutoring and Test Prep. Shahar, thanks for joining me. I love what we're going to talk about today because I kind of am a numbers person. I like when you say, hey, there's 4 rules for academic success. And I'm curious, what are those 4 rules in your opinion?
So, yeah, these keep getting slightly revised as I talk more and think about it more. But here's what I got so far. So the first rule is make learning active. We grow up with this feeling like, oh, I'm just going to read this book and then I'm going to know it, you know, or I'm going to read this chapter in the textbook and then I'm going to know everything in it. And that is just so false. It's not even funny.
Right.
So if you read a chapter in a textbook and get asked some questions about it, you know, the next day, you're going to recall about 20% of what you read, like a minority of it is actually going to stick. If you take that reading and let's say every 2 paragraphs, you write a 1-sentence summary of what those 2 paragraphs just said. And so that's the active. We're starting to make it a little bit active. And if you just do that, then your recall is going to go up to like 50%. If you do that, and then at the end of the chapter, you take a 10-question quiz about what you just read, it's going to go up to like 70%. And then, you know, if you do what I call a 1-pager, you know, you read the whole thing, you do all this stuff, you know, you get some different colors and you make a little sort of organizational chart with bullet points that sort of expresses in your own structural understanding of what you just read in that chapter, your recall is going to go up to like 85, 90%.
Yeah.
So like every additional step of making learning active, and in this case, just talking about reading a textbook, increases the stickiness of it in your brain. And this can apply to absolutely everything. You know, if you're doing math, it's about doing math problems, but then also, you know, you can make it more active by building a model. You know, my son's, he's in this super sort of project school and they had to turn some object in their house. He chose our dog into a whole bunch of 3D shapes. Like, okay, the head is an oval, and then there's the legs are pyramids, and this, and then calculate the volume of our dog.
Oh.
And it was like, okay, like that's doing something with learning about the volume of these things and making it super fun. And then he had to actually build all these little shapes, but like, he will never forget, you know, these basic volume rules because it was so active. So a lot of schools don't present that to you quite in that way, but you can do that yourself. You know, the 1-pager is like the simplest. It's not easy, but it's the simplest way of thinking about that. You know, take everything you're supposed to know about whatever it is you're studying, the history of this novel, you know, and put it into 1 clean-looking page that you've created. And the process of doing that will create so many connections in your brain that were not there before that will make the information just much more available to you when you need it. So that's the first rule.
Okay, I love that. Make learning active. I know we do all of our learning at our schools through AI, and we have benefits of you get the testing repetition, right? Constant repetition and checking in on that and going back and doing this. And then, of course, connecting it with real world, what makes sense. And there are ways for students to be able to figure out how to recreate that, even if, as you said, Shahar, not all schools are presenting information in that way. I do love your dog example. And I happen to see, for those listening, we record this podcast on video, and I saw that you've got a lab. So I'm curious if your son used like was it a cylinder because he's a fat, hungry lab, or is your lab still keeping his more like maybe pyramid like triangular shape?
Yeah, he's actually a white golden retriever, often mistaken for a lab.
A white golden. I have a golden at home too. Mine's real dark though. I have a dark red golden. So
beautiful.
Yeah, my apologies. Well,
no,
goldens,
no worries.
Goldens I find are a little less food hungry than labs are. So your son probably.
Yeah, but yeah, there is definitely a cylinder for the body, you know, and then he has these like little, these cute little triangular things for the legs, which were kind of adorable. So yeah.
I love it. Okay. What's the second rule for academic success?
The second rule is make learning social. Teenagers, and there's so much research on this, like teenagers, we're all social beings, right? We all live in networks of people that we, you know, learn from and get help from, et cetera. But teenagers are especially social, especially in learning. If you add in one or two people to the process of learning something, as opposed to doing it on your own, just the research is really clear that you know, as long as they're actually talking about or doing something that is on task, so to speak, then they're going to learn more. They're going to remember more. They bounce off of each other. They make connections with each other. The older we get, the less, it's still necessary, but it's a little less necessary than it is when we're teenagers. You know, I'm able to, you know, let's say if I want to go learn how to, you know, fix something in my car, I could pretty easily just start watching YouTube videos and blah, 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 and getting there. But for your typical teenager, if you add in another person to go fix that problem with a car or whatever it might be, it's going to work a lot better because they just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Their brains are just programmed to feed off of what's happening in their social environment. And so group project work is more important for teenagers than it is for grownups. I mean, obviously, again, it's all good and we're all social.
Yeah, but it's so helpful when you have someone else. And the other thing is, especially if you can be with other kids who have like a good attitude about, you know, learning, then it's infectious, right?
Absolutely.
That's where it can be so exciting when you're just studying together. And I see that with my younger daughter all the time. She loves working with other people, even if they're working on things that are solitary projects, just the presence of someone else is really helpful. So I think that's a great, great lesson.
Totally.
Okay. What else? What else contributes to academic success?
The third one is make learning your own. And this can be tough a lot of times. You know, you're presented with like, here's what's on the math test, go study it. But any connection you can make to, again, like the dog thing is a good example of bringing that into, because it's like, go find something in your house that is important to you in some way and calculate the volume of it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he's like, oh, my dog that I love. And all of a sudden he's connected to it. Like, this means something to him. He has some intrinsic motivation, not just extrinsic. Huh, what is the volume of my dog, you know?
Yeah.
And it's something that he cares about because it has some personal connection to him. And bless the math teacher for being able to do that with math. It's like, that's a tough job to make math really personal. But, you know, even math, it's possible. Obviously, it's much easier to do that in history, for example. You know, I remember another project that my son had that I thought was really great was go find out about a dish that your family makes and that's important for your family, let's say on holidays or whatever, and, you know, write a paper about the history of that dish.
Mm-hmm.
And all sorts of fascinating historical connections come in. You know, I think he picked some Eastern European thing. Oh, this noodle thing that my grandmother used to make from like Hungary or whatever. And, you know, he's sort of learning all about like these migrations and stuff like that. And again, like, it becomes so much more sticky if you can make some personal connection to it. If the teacher does that, it's easier. But if the teacher doesn't do it for you, you know, the family can help do this and et cetera.
Absolutely. Well, and I think, you know, I remember an example that comes up for me is I remember when I was in about sixth grade, I had to basically draw the floor plan of my house and then try and figure out what the square footage of my house was and do all this. And at the time, my family and I lived in like kind of a condo type thing that was multi-level and very, you know, like it wasn't just one floor on top of the other. It was like one floor over here and then a floor. It was very split. And I remember being like, I don't know how I'm ever going to figure this out. This is really, really, really hard because there was no, you know, no floor was on the same, you know, same path as another floor. And so I spent a lot of time trying to figure this out. And where it stuck with me throughout is, I'll tell you, anytime I go somewhere, I will end up in my head thinking about the dimensions and where in space, right, a house plan is, right? And so I can go back through the houses that I've lived, you know, throughout my life. And I kind of go and I do that exercise, all because I had like a great math teacher who said, hey, we're going to figure out how to calculate your house and draw plans. You know, I also kind of thought more about architecture, right, and how that all works. And it's a total example that has carried me through in a lot of other ways. And again, that's something that you said, unfortunately, you know, it's not always possible for the teachers to send that assignment to a kid in order to make sure that it's personalized, but families can kind of come up with ideas and think about those types of things. So I think that's great.
Yeah.
All right. What's your fourth rule for success? I like where you're going, by the way, so far. I'm totally digging what you're saying. So let's hear the fourth one.
The fourth, well, I can't, I it's hard, you know, to limit it to four. I really want to have five.
Yeah.
But the fourth one is practice self-advocacy, which is, you know, it's so important. You know, this is life. Like, this is such a core life skill. Like, what do you want? And are you able to state it in clear terms? You know, it's hard for us to just say what we want. For a lot of us, that's scary.
Yeah.
You know, the earlier we start practicing that, doing it politely, you know, and if that means asking your teacher, I would like more material to study for this, more practice questions, or is there a video I can watch that would help me understand this better, or whatever it is, or, you know, I know you marked this wrong, but I don't really understand why. Can you please explain it to me? Or even, can I have another chance on this test? I know I felt sick the day before and wasn't able to study as much as I wanted to, and if at all possible, you know, all of these kinds of things that are scary for students to ask.
They are, but such important life skills, right? Yeah, advocating is so important. And parents, I want you to listen to this. And this comes up every once in a while. That is a skill that your kid can start practicing far before high school. And I think it's a skill that often parents rob their children of because they want to sweep in and solve the problem, ask the question, do those things. So if you are a parent who sits there and says, oh, let me reach out to your, you know, to the teacher, let me go talk to this, let me do that, you got to stop doing it. The way, way better thing to do is spend time at the dinner table with your child, coaching them and asking them questions in order to help them figure out how to advocate for themselves. But, you know, stop the helicopter parenting when it comes to advocating for your child, and instead teach your kid how to advocate for themselves. And again, kids in kindergarten can learn to do that, right? It's never too early to start coaching your kids to figure out how to be advocates for themselves instead of you having to do it. And don't do it when you're in high school. You know what? I remember a question. I met a woman in my neighborhood and we went on a walk with our dogs. And she said at the time, her son was a junior. And she said, you know, my son got this bad grade. And I emailed the teacher and I was going through and arguing with the teacher. And I'm just so frustrated with what the teacher said. And I was like, well, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, why isn't he doing it? And here's what she said. Oh no, I'm emailing the teacher from his account, pretending to be my son.
Oh my God.
And I remember sitting there going, I think this might be the last walk I take with this lady in my neighborhood, because that's crazy, right? Absolutely crazy. And I said, does your son know about this? She's like, no, he doesn't know. So she was literally engaging in a contentious debate with her son's teacher in his name and persona without her son understanding this, trying to get some grade change. And I just thought, okay, this is important for me to try to advocate for other parents to not be like this parent. So
yeah.
If that neighbor is listening to the podcast, sorry, I ratted you out, but it was ridiculous. So
yeah, I was a high school teacher for 10 years before I started the business. And
so you saw it.
Yeah, that kind of thing happened, you know, too often. It's not helpful. It's just not.
Yeah.
Even if all you could get your student to do is go up to the teacher and say, like, can I talk to you for 5 minutes? You know, and even if it's super awkward, that is so much better than doing it for them. You know, they have to start doing that.
I totally agree. Well, I love this conversation. I think that your four rules for academic success are so universal and they make sense. And I think it's great. So in the future, if you end up with a fifth rule, I'm all ears for you on that, Shahar. But thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Happy to join. Thank you for having me. That was fun.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of Future of Education. Thanks to Shahar Link. He's the CEO and founder of Mindspire Tutoring and Test Prep. So go check out his website if you have a kid who is starting to get ready for some of the standardized testing that comes with the second half of high school. Go check them out. If you want to hear more from Shahar, you can find his contact info in this episode's show notes or visit mindspire.com. If you didn't have a chance to take notes while listening, head over to futureofeducationpod.com. We have summaries of all of our episodes and contact info for our guests. You can also check me out on social media. My handle is @2hourlearning on Instagram, or you can go to Future of Education on YouTube. And if you haven't subscribed yet, you want a daily stream of ways to help your kids in your podcast feed, we're going to publish an episode pretty much almost every day during the year. So hit that subscribe or follow button in your podcast app. I'll be back in your feed tomorrow. That's all for today. But until next time, remember, kids are limitless. Our job is to help unlock their potential.